Yes, I did.
Yes, hello, Valerie. Valerie had having internet problems last week and she couldn't join us.
Yeah, everything's puzzling to me, but here I am.
Good.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Valerie.
So, Mark, if you're going to do a recording and make the audio available to people who missed the class, can you? Is there a link that you can just send me that I can send to the whole class? I'm sorry?
Yes.
Okay, that would be great. That would be so great. I think audio was just going to be much easier to deal with. But we'll see. You're going to let us know if audio and video are out of sync. In fact, you're recording now already?
I am, and they are in perfect sync.
Okay, so I don't know. Maybe it was a problem at John's end. He was quite concerned about it. And I don't see him.
Llama, should we not be with the picture or with our picture?
I think for now we can be with the picture.
All right.
And it's possible that we'll somehow get overloaded if everybody's on video. It's supposed to support it.
Okay.
Up to 100 people. But I can ask everybody to turn off their video, or I can turn off everybody's video. I think I have that superpower as well. And if there turned out to be problems. So everybody, if you are having a problem, if it gets glitchy, if, you know, beyond like little things, like if the audio and video do go out of sync, please let us know. And we'll just ask everybody to turn off their video. But I think it's nice to at least start out with video.
Yeah.
Chet Lesniak, hello.
Hi, hello, how are you?
You want to introduce yourself? I don't think you've actually been able to join us yet, have you? Or were you there
first time? No, this is the first time I've been able to come in.
Hi, Chet.
Hi, Ann.
Where are you, Chet?
I'm in Lee, New Hampshire.
Okay. One of the old buddies.
Yeah, Marilyn, I think you met him at the Chin Raising meeting.
I did.
Chet's a Dharma Path student and was just at KTC for the Chin Raising teachings and initiation, and he's part of the New Hampshire Maine Sangha. And he lives really close to where I lived in New Hampshire when I lived there. I lived in an adjoining town, Nottingham. So who else has joined? We're gonna generally give people like 5 minutes to get on, and then we're gonna launch. And it's now I have 1:05.
Where is Anne from?
Anne is from Maine.
From Maine?
Yeah.
Anne, I guess she was here the first week, but she didn't really like. We couldn't see her or hear her.
You're asking me, Mark.
Namdak.
Ah.
So you haven't met before?
I haven't met. No.
Well, from Key West.
Yeah. Namdak's in Key West. We could all go around and just, like, why don't we just, Marilyn and Pat, just a couple of words for those who
audio
don't.
Audio problem.
What?
Oh, it's all internet connection. Okay.
Yeah, you guys are frozen. So it may just be you. Is anybody else having a problem?
No.
Okay. No. All right. If people who don't have as strong an internet connection, you may get some glitchiness. Like there's a thing that happens where it kind of freezes and the words go like that. But it's usually temporary. And John says, I don't know if it's practical, like if you have wireless, you can plug directly into the router or get closer to the wireless source or whatever. But if it doesn't bother you particularly, it can be a little glitchy. Who cares? All right, Marilyn and Patrick, you want to say a couple of words for like those who don't know you?
We're the home of Kagyu Drukchu Chodzong and have been for 17 years and are happy with it. And we're very grateful students of Lama Chodron.
They're in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. And that is their home. They're in their home. Their home has been, as he said, for 17 years, their home has been the Dharma Center, and it's very beautiful. Anne, you want to say about yourself?
I'm with the New Hampshire Sangha, Kagyu Sampin Chuling, and I live in Maine. And we have been a Sangha for about the same time.
17 years, since 2000, the end of 2000.
Yeah.
So Anand has been a stalwart member of the Sangha, and she leads the group. They meet once a week and do Shine and sometimes Chenrezig. Is that accurate?
That's accurate, my dear.
Kathy, you want to say a little something?
Yeah, I'm in Maine. I'm at the other end of Maine and almost into Canada. And but I'm actually part of the Key West Sangha.
Where in Maine are you?
I'm outside of Machias.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been up here quite a while. Where are you in Maine?
I'm way down south in Kittery Point.
In Kittery Point, all right.
He lives in a very old house. When was your house built?
About 1760.
Wow. Nice.
Okay, Namdok, you're up next.
I'm in Key West, part of the Key West Sangha, and I'm not sure how long the Sangha has been in existence. Kathy would know because she's a founding member of the Key West Sangha.
I thought somebody was going to ask that.
It's been a while. It's definitely been a while.
You know, it's probably right around the same time. Yeah. It was in the early 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, quite a while.
So I'm a happy student of Lama Norla Rinpoche's. And I was originally a student of Kempo Kartar Rinpoche's in 1993, I think. And then after a few years passed, Daedra introduced me to Lama Norla Rinpoche when he came down to Key West. I don't even know how many years, at least 10 years.
More than that. The Wooden Head Gallery, right?
That's right.
All right, so Chet, we already checked in with Chet. If you have anything further to say about yourself, please feel free.
No, I'm good, thanks. It's okay. Nice to meet everybody.
All right, and Valerie?
I'm part of the Key West Sangha, and I also attend the Sangha in Manhattan on Wednesday, very regularly. And
you commute, haha.
What?
You commute, haha.
Yeah, it's a short commute, and I love it. I really do.
And she visited Bhutan.
And I love you, Lama Children.
Oh, I love you too, Hillary. Mark Hoyer, and then we'll launch into the class.
Okay, I am just friends with Patrick and Marilyn, and I've taken a few teachings with Lama Norla and I've met him a few times. So I haven't joined the Sangha, you know, like officially.
He's our webmaster. He does our email list. And long time.
And Kittery Point would like to thank him for his help enabling me to see you today.
All right. Well, I guess this is us today. I have a feeling it's going to be like this. We have almost 20 people in the class officially, but every week there's going to be some reason that some people can't come. That's totally fine. You don't have to let me know. You can if you want me to know, but just whoever shows up, and we have our class. And today we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people, and somebody could join late. And again, Mark is going to make a recording and share the audio with everybody so that those who missed the class will be able to catch up if they want to. That's completely optional. And I also wanted to say a little bit before we do the prayers about participation in the class. This is meant to be very free form. I personally, it is my style to air. Oh, I'm going to mute everybody because I'm hearing a lot of background noise. So I can mute everybody from here. You don't have to do anything. You're all muted, and you can unmute yourselves at will. I tend to favor basically TMI, too much information. So those who relish like me in too much information, you can do everything. You can read everything I send out. You can memorize everything. You can do a running memorization, and by the end, you're going to know 37 verses. Or you can go the opposite spectrum. You just come to class, and that's all you do. And in between, you know, you just pick your level of involvement. And that's fine. For me, like, I feel like for me personally, the more I engage, the more I internalize it, and we're actually going to have a verse that speaks to that, verse 3. The more I engage, the more I get out of it. But not everybody has the same situation. So please feel free to take or leave. John, you've just joined us, and your little thing says Linda Jordan. That's fascinating. You're identified as Linda Jordan on the screen. All right. Anyway, I just wanted to say I checked in with everybody, and nobody else had a problem with syncing, like during the class last week. You can unmute yourself if you have anything to say. Since we're coming in late, I think we're not going to do any technological troubleshooting right now, but nobody else had trouble with syncing last week. Mark is actually going to record today. You're also welcome to record if you want to. Do you want me to give you permission to record? All right, it's coming. Okay. But Mark's going to record and make the audio of the recording available, because he says that's an option. So anyway, we'll troubleshoot as we go along. And John, you can give me feedback about this class after class if you'd like. So anyway, level of participation completely up to you. I'm just going to make it all available. So please don't get worried if it feels like I'm throwing a lot of stuff out, because I will. And it's all optional. You don't have to read the emails, except for the invitation email is very useful, because that allows you to join the class. All right, so we've done all of the sort of preliminary background setting, context setting, who wrote the book, who wrote the commentary. I'm going to leave it to you guys to refresh that as you need to. Always good to keep it in mind. We've looked at the textual outline a little bit, and that's just a nifty feature of this book, the Dingo Chensei Rinpoche book, is that it gives you sort of the infrastructure of the whole thing. Today we launch into the verses, like full on, and that's going to be the format from now on. We'll probably do about a verse a week, as I've said. Sometimes we might do two, and in this case, this particular verse, we've done more than 1 week, but we just touched on it in 5 minutes at the end of each class. But today we're doing the verses. So I'm going to, your assignment, your homework assignment, always optional, was to read the commentary on verse 1 this week. And we're going to hit some highlights of that. But the first thing we're going to do, I don't know if everybody has their handouts or has memorized the verse. I'm going to get my copy out. We're going to chant the verse together. And we're going to do our opening prayers. I'm going to get mine out of the file cabinet. Okay. Opening prayers. Prayers to be recited at teachings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru for continents, sun and moon,
This imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms, according to the different propensities of beings. Please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. And I will do my prayers. Dadan sem chantam chelo chusu drawers in G lap to soul, chulam to drawers in G lap to soul, umtrupa selwars in G lap to soul, trupa yeshe su charwars in G lap to soul. I pray for blessing, may my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn towards the Dharma. I pray for blessing, may the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing, may the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing, may confusion arise as wisdom. That was the four dharmas of Gampopa. And now from the aspiration to excellent conduct, just an aspiration for the teaching itself. Lai ke dang lu dang nu chin ke chulvam dada mi ke nam dang drova kunji drake jit sambar tam che ke ju daki chitento. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of demons and of humans too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And then for all of us to generate bodhicitta, the whole point of this text and aspects of the text of the verses are echoed in this traditional formulation of bodhicitta to begin. Please give rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. So now, if you have your copy of the first verse, or if you've memorized it, we're going to chant that together. Sadly, without being able to hear each other, it'll just be me because it will get glitchy if we all input sound at the same time. We're going to chant the first verse three times. This precious human life so hard to find, its freedoms and resources like a boat to navigate samsara's endless sea and make myself and other beings free. For that without distraction day and night, to study, contemplate, and meditate, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. This precious human life so hard to find, its freedoms and resources like a boat to navigate samsara's endless sea and make myself and other beings free. For that without distraction day and night, to study, contemplate, and meditate, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. This precious human life so hard to find, its freedoms and resources like a boat to navigate samsara's endless sea and make myself and other beings free. For that without distraction day and night, to study, contemplate, and meditate, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. So I'm going to ask a question, and you can unmute yourself if you wish to share any thoughts that you may have on this. It was the homework topic, which is to think about, is this possible? Is it possible to study, meditate, and contemplate day and night without distraction? I mean, I think he means continuously. Day and night. We sleep at night. And then we learn methods for actually in retreat for practicing Dharma while we're asleep. Not that we necessarily have success, but any thoughts on that? Is this possible? And if it's not possible, well, if it is possible, how is it possible? And if it's not possible, what does he mean?
I think it's possible, Lama Chodron. Once you are studying Buddhism, you sort of look at everything through a Buddhist eye. And in that way, it's possible.
Very, very nicely put. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Marilyn, are you?
I'm going to say that it's aspirational. and that the more you do it, the more it sinks in. So the luckier, I mean, it says, you know, don't wait until you're 50. But, you know, we didn't meet Rinpoche until we were in our low. It takes time to have it permeate one's being, but it does work that way.
There was a little book that we had at KFC. I think you had it, children.
Mm-hmm.
It was A Day in the Life of a Bodhisattva. Do you remember that
book? Bokar Rinpoche. It was a Bokar Rinpoche book.
Oh, it was?
I think so.
Anyway, it was from the moment he awoke, it just showed how he was living the Dharma with everything he did and how he viewed everything, the water he was pouring and the, so I guess it is certainly possible if you're a developed practitioner.
Yeah. So do you remember any examples or did you just say one and I kind of?
Well, it was a long time ago, but no, if he had water, it was a blessing of the Dharma on, pouring through and ridding you of your imperfections. Everything was like that. He just likened it to some aspect of blessing and aspiration.
I remember turning on a light switch would be like illuminating, moment for all beings. Or, there was something for turning off a light switch. I can't think what that would be. Or if you're sweeping the house, or now we'd be vacuuming, you're vacuuming up all the impurities or all the suffering of beings. I remember that. I haven't seen that book in a while. Any other thoughts? Totally optional, but everybody's welcome to speak up if you have any insights or any thoughts to share. So one thing that I was thinking about this, because I thought about this too, is that there's different levels of practice. I mean, first of all, study, contemplation, and meditation. So you're mixing and matching all day long, right? You might have a formal meditation session or a time when you sit down and formally study by reading a book or memorizing a verse or whatever you do. But then when you're, then there's like informally, you might be taking a walk and see a bug that's hurt or a bird that's hurt, and you might do some tonglen because you have that. Or as you're walking, you might walk in a meditative way, which, you can meditate anywhere, because the only difference between meditating and not meditating is what you do with your thoughts. It's like when you're meditating, you're simply not following your thoughts. So, you walk through I have the botanical garden next door to me. I walk through and I notice the colors of the flowers. Your mind is so much more open when you're not thinking about stuff. And if you do think about stuff, you can do that, and then you can kind of come back. It can be your home base to just like be an open awareness, but engaged open awareness where you're noticing sensory input. So that can be meditation. Anything, absolutely anything you do in your life can be meditation, because it just means being present, being fully present to what you're doing and not lost in thoughts about something else. Which is not to disrespect thoughts and the thinking process. Those are very useful things to us. We need those. But when we don't need them, we, as meditators, we know how to turn that off and just rest in open awareness no matter what we're doing. So what about day and night? I mean, do you think by day and night he just means like the evening hours before you go to bed? Like I said, in retreat, we get methods for working with dreams and working with deep sleep. And those are things you train in before you go to sleep. That I have a practice I do before I go to sleep that reminds me what I'm going to do. Should I wake up? Should I find myself dreaming and recognize it as a dream? I do this, this, and this. And you practice how you're going to rest in lucidity when you're in deep sleep. I would never know if that happened because I'm not awake enough to know, but But so like we can't control, like we can barely control our waking hours, right? What we do with our mind in our waking hours. So what about when we're sleepy? Well, we can set the stage. I mean, you can, you know, as you're going to bed, you can make an aspiration, as Anne was saying, you know, we can make aspirations for everything. While I'm sleeping, may I benefit beings. You know, while I'm sleeping, may I not lose touch with ultimate and relative bodhicitta. While I'm sleeping, may I recognize my dreams. That's part of my practice, is that you just make the resolution, I'm going to recognize my dream. Not much effect so far, but, you know, I'm not a very strong practitioner of that, but I do that every night. Anyway, you can go to sleep. There's methods that we're taught for when we go to sleep. For example, to visualize the guru, the lama, in our heart. I don't know if everybody's heard this one, but this is one that Lama Norla gives to everybody, I think. You can visualize the lama in your heart, or Chenrezig, you can pick a deity. Amitabha, there's a special practice for Amitabha to do this. Like, you've just visualized them in your heart, and they're radiating light from their heart, and it's illuminating the room. Going to sleep like that is a very lovely experience. Or Kenpo Sultan Jomso Rinpoche taught a method where you sort of, as you're going to sleep, you sort of dissolve into the Dharmakaya. You kind of let go of relative reality. And I think anybody can do that on some level. And so, you know, you can actually be practicing as you go to sleep. You could be doing Tonglen. You could go to sleep breathing in the bad stuff and breathing out the good stuff, sharing everything good with everybody. You can also, and this is an instruction we've gotten many times from Lama Norla and Kala Rinpoche, and it's in the Great Path of Awakening. It's in the third of the four thoughts that we recite in our Nundro, that every day, so that the third of the four thoughts in the Nundro is karma. It's when at the time of death, I will not be free because my previous actions will take control of me. Therefore, I must engage only in positive actions, avoid negative actions, and every day examine the stream of my being. So every day at the end of the day, we're very much encouraged to look back. This is a whole slogan in the Great Path of Awakening for you Key Westerners who just finished that text. A whole slogan that I'm losing my train of thought. I can't be mindful even when I'm talking. Darn. A whole slogan about, anyway. I know what it is, but it's just not coming to mind. But anyway, you get the point. That's a lot of examples. You get the point. Any practice we have, we can, you know, if we really put it into practice, we can do it. We can make aspirations anytime, day or night. So as I think Valerie said, you can just be in a Dharma, see everything with a Dharma eye, like be in a Dharma frame of mind all the time. And I'm remembering Lama Norla years ago, years and years ago, 1982 and 1986, right? Kala Rinpoche came. I was there. He visited. He stayed at KTC for weeks, a couple of months. He was giving empowerments for the retreats that went in 1982 and 1986. And people always, as Westerners, we think that our lamas need entertainment. Which may be true to some extent. I don't know. I remember that some people took Lama Norla to see the first Star Wars movie in 1977 or whatever when it came out. And he didn't understand anything because he didn't like have the language. But he enjoyed, I think he enjoyed the special effects. But Lama Norla, so Kala Rinpoche, same thing. People took him out to see things, to do things. And I think both times he was here, the circus was in town. And in New York City, and he was taken to the circus. And Lama Norla once said that Kala Rinpoche went to the circus. Like when people took him to the circus, he went to the circus and he enjoyed the circus. But while he was watching the circus, he never forgot impermanence. And he never forgot that it's all suffering, that he's seeing the three types of suffering. So even when we're watching TV, you know, remember I talk about this a lot, but one of the things Kala Rinpoche, like 1982, he came and people said, I can't find time to practice. You know, we're Westerners, we're very, very busy. I can't find time to practice. How am I going to do Shinrezi every day and meditation every day? And he said, having looked at Westerners' habits, he said, well, that's not hard. Just don't watch TV. You know, free up a couple hours a day. So he came back in 1986 and people said, couldn't do it. Like, can't give up TV. You know, we still can't find time to practice, but we can't give up TV. And he said, okay, so cut it in half. Cut your TV in half. So he didn't say you can't ever watch TV, because our habits are really strong. And if you try, as we know, if you try to just squash a habit, sometimes it just gets stronger. So he tried, you know, he thought it might be easy for us to give up TV, but when it wasn't, it's like, give up half, you watch 2 hours a day, we'll just watch 1 hour, you've got a whole hour. You could do Shinrezi really, really slow. You have time. So even watching TV, you could be doing manis. You could be remembering that you're seeing the three kinds of suffering and go, oh yeah, there's the suffering of suffering. Oh dear, there's the suffering of change. They think they're having a really fabulous time, but it's suffering. Or you could just be going, all of these people I'm watching on the screen are dying, like moment by moment. And in fact, this movie was made in 1963. Half of the actors are dead now. So there's just ways to bring Dharma to every single experience. And that is my spiel on without distraction day and night. We can do it. Yes. Yeah, and whatever we're doing, you know, and this is like whatever it is. Actually, I wrote down something that came to me today that actually is useful. So at all times we can practice, and we should. We're encouraged to practice. It's a threefold thing. Like, it's not just be mindful all the time. It's practice mindfulness, awareness, and carefulness. Those are the three things. And I don't hear it taught a lot now, but I remember Lama Norla saying it many, many times, and it was in texts. Always be mindful, aware, and careful. So what is the difference in those things? Like, what does that mean? Well, it can be explained different ways. So if you hear a different explanation, that's perfectly fine. But how I understand them from what I've been taught is mindfulness is being aware of where you are and what you're doing. You're present in the present moment in that sense. Like if you're washing the dishes, you know you're washing the dishes. If you're driving somewhere, you're not totally blanking out like in fantasy land or rehashing an argument with somebody. You're like seeing the trees and, you know, the things you're passing. So that's mindfulness, being aware where you are and what you're doing at every moment. You know, there's going to be gaps. Don't worry about it. Just come back when you're lost. So what's the difference between that and awareness? Well, the explanation I really like is from Lama Tashi in Seattle. Awareness is basically staying in touch with, so mindfulness is being in touch with relative reality, like what you're doing. Awareness is being in touch with ultimate reality. You know, open awareness. Always remembering emptiness. Like you're in touch with emptiness, you're in touch with luminosity, you're in touch with the unceasing appearances of things, including thoughts. You're remembering that life is like a dream or an illusion, that it's not as solid as what you're, so you're aware of what you're experiencing is mindfulness, aware that it's not as solid as it looks and seems. That's awareness. So what's carefulness? Carefulness is making sure, it's that third, again, the third of the four thoughts. Each day I must engage in positive actions, avoid negative actions, and examine my stream of being. So carefulness is making sure you're on the Dharma path, making sure you're not engaging in unvirtuous actions, making sure your actions are in accordance with the Dharma. That is actually, you know, that famous verse or famous line, that famous quote that's attributed to Guru Rinpoche. You see it attributed to everybody, but ultimately, initially, it seems to have come from Guru Rinpoche. My awareness is like the sky, and my actions, my awareness is as vast as the sky, and my actions are as fine as barley flour. So that means you're always in this nature of mind, this open awareness, this dreamlike reality. You're always there. Your mind is always there, but you're always making sure your actions are in accordance with the teachings, that you're not doing things that are going to hurt other people or animals, or that you're that are going to dig you deeper into samsara. So those are three things. Again, you can apply that to every single moment of waking life and aspire to do it during sleeping life. So that's how we can practice Dharma without distraction day and night. I think we're all agreed on that. Anybody have any objections to that idea? Anybody disagree that this verse, this instruction from Tokme Zangpo is literally possible? Or anybody have any parting comments, observations, insights, questions on that? All right, this is worth mulling over. Oh, John.
Yeah, actually I didn't say it, but then you said it. So, it was about meditating all day. And it's like you're in a meditative, not state, but your awareness, your mindfulness, and then awareness on top of that is there. And I just thought of an analogy of what you're saying just now about the three, the carefulness added on. Mm-hmm. And what if that, could it be applied to or looked at like a conversation where your mindfulness is that you're listening to the other person and your awareness is looking at whether you're going to speak or not, and then what you're probably going to say at that time. And you're careful because you don't want to say the wrong thing, yeah, and that kind of thing. So that's all three combined in that. But that's like a meditative state. And you can do that meditating like all day. And I try to tell my class that all the time when I have that class. And it's like every day. I mean, you're eating, right? In the morning, there you go. And then you're brushing everything. You know, every single thing. You're walking. We do that. Walk, you know, you got meditating all day long, everything you do, and you're breathing every day, every minute, and that can be a reaffirmation that you're alive. Because I read a description of walking meditation. Every time your feet hit the ground, you can remember, ooh, I'm alive, I can do this. Or breathing, wow, I just took a breath, that means I'm alive. How nice. But anyway, just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Mingyur Rinpoche once, many years ago, was teaching Shine meditation at Zamlin Kunshab, our New York City Mother Center. And he was teaching this exact thing about how to bring meditation into daily life. And he said the exact same thing. He used the same example. He went through a list of things you can be doing, and you can bring mindfulness and awareness to those things. And he said, well, what about conversation? And he said, well, I'm not really sure. So he had a little conversation with himself back and forth. If you know Mingyur Rinpoche, you know he can be very hilarious. And he had a little hilarious conversation with himself, like, no, da, 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 da. And then he said, yep, you can do it. You can do it even while you're having a conversation. So very good example. There was something else I was going to say, but I might have forgot it. There's always more. So is everybody, technologically speaking, having an okay experience at this time? Okay, good to know. All right. So we've chanted our verse, and we've talked about whether this is actually possible to do. So I suggest that we all make it our aspiration, if it isn't already, to really never forget this verse. Like, even if you didn't memorize it, just remember that that's our job as a bodhisattva, is to study, contemplate, and meditate. Some one of those, some combination of those, all the time. Oh, I know what I was going to say. It's another funny story. It's a funny story about this that some of you have probably heard me say before. If you know the book Blazing Wisdom, it's the sort of the life story of Tulku Urjan, who was Mingyur Rinpoche's father. If you have not read that book, you must rush out and get it. Because first of all, it's very funny. And second, it's just very lovely and endearing. And it has lots and lots of stories about life in Tibet before the diaspora. You really get a sense of what it was like to be a Dharma practitioner in Tibet of the like the early 20th century, late 19th, early 20th century. but one of the stories he tells, it actually becomes a running theme in the book, and it reads like it's a joke. It reads like a joke. I think it's true, but by the third time you see somebody say the same thing, it becomes really funny. And what it is that Tulku Orjan would, you know, in Tibet they didn't have video games, they didn't have TV. So Dharma practitioners talked about Dharma things, like that was the thing to talk about. Like, what are your experiences with this? And, oh, I have a practice where, you know, somebody has 16 arms and is juggling 12 things. Oh, teach me that. Well, so you would talk about your meditation experiences and sometimes, you know, to ask things. And so every single person he asked about or he talked to about their meditative experience would say the same thing. And these are all very advanced practitioners. They would say, I'm able to maintain awareness during every single thing except when I'm falling asleep. So it becomes a really funny thing that like they just lost their awareness. They lost that consciousness. Like there was this moment between waking and sleeping where they just couldn't make the transition in a conscious way. And it's just really fun. It's a fun book to read. So we all have those. Pay attention when you're falling asleep and see if you can maintain awareness then. All right, so we're going to look now at the commentary by Dingo Chense Rinpoche briefly. I do want to do some meditation at the end. Does everybody have their Two Wings of Awakening sheet? Because if you do, we can do that today. See, people have been saying they'd really like to get to that. So, and if you don't have it, it's no problem because it's a guided meditation and you don't need the sheet really while we're doing it. So we're going to reserve the last 10 or 15 minutes for that, which gives us, we're going to 2:30 today. If anybody needs to leave early, just you can do a chat thing and say, sorry, everybody got to go. Or you can just leave quietly and, you know, we'll probably miss you. But just, you know, come and go as you need to. So I'm on page 54 of Dingo Chense Rinpoche. You don't have to have the book open, but you're welcome to have it. So this is the first part of the 37 practices, the seven verse preparation. So the first seven verses are what he calls the preparation, and Ken MacLeod says the same thing in his introduction to his book, Reflections on Silver River. First seven verses are like preliminaries to practice, the same way that Gampopa in the Jewel Ornament had the three prerequisites, which encompass a lot of the same material. First seven verses are getting ready to be a bodhisattva, the preparation that goes into being a bodhisattva. You could call it the prerequisites for being a bodhisattva. And the first is this first verse. So he introduces it by saying, first, the need to give meaning to this human existence of yours, so rare and difficult to obtain. And then he explains it in a very traditional, classic presentation. So we're going to look at this first, but we're going to reserve some time. I'm going to read you Ken MacLeod's and Pema Chodron's commentaries, both of which are very short on this verse. And I think, Kathy, you wanted to share your experience with Ken MacLeod's book. Do you want to say a little something about that?
Sure. I was really very pleased when Dave, my son, had told me how much he liked the Silver River. And so I got it on my Kindle and I started reading it, and I found myself, you know, really reading it. It really touched me in a very essential way. It's much shorter. And as you say, it's, you know, it gives the Western point of view. And to me, I'm finding that is I'm really connecting with that, and the traditional Tibetan of Rinpoche here is eloquent, but it's not touching me the same way. So
just a little plug there for Ken MacLeod's book, Reflections on Silver River.
Yeah, right.
It's got some really good endorsements. As I think I've said, I don't agree with his interpretation in every case. I don't agree with his translation in every case. He's a little innovative with the translation. But it's very solid. It's really solid, and it's really helpful to have that Western perspective. And Pema Chodron used Reflections on Silver River as the basis for her seminar on 37 Practices of a Bodhisattva last year at Omega Institute, 3-day seminar. That was her main text. And Dingo Chensei Rinpoche's book was her secondary text, which she didn't refer to a lot. So, you know, if you can afford it and you'd like to have that other perspective, I think it's useful to have Ken MacLeod's book too, but it's not necessary. If you're only going to get one, I recommend Dingo Chensei just because it's Dingo Chensei, just because Dingo Chensei, just because it is the traditional perspective in an expansive way. Like, a lot of questions are answered in this. So thank you for that, Kathy. I really appreciate your sharing that with me this week. So Dingo Chensei packs a lot in here. Marilyn was saying that she had gone back to the Torch of Certainty to review some of the same things. Anybody on the Dharma Path, in the Dharma Path program, knows these things: the 8 unfavorable conditions, the 10 resources, the 16 ways you can fail to make use of your human existence, even though you have a precious human existence. We're going to review those extremely briefly in case anybody's really not familiar with them. Looking at everybody here, everybody knows them, but it's always good to go over them from time to time. So the 8 states in which there is no freedom to practice, and the reason for going over this is to fully appreciate the opportunity we have. It's so easy to forget and take it for granted. So you remind yourself, I wasn't born in a hell realm. I wasn't born as a hungry ghost. I wasn't born as an animal. These can be interpreted literally. Like, I think traditional Tibetans take those very literally. Like, when you die, you could go to a hell realm. And, you know, there's the 8 hot hells and the 8 cold hells, and they're very specific places. You can read that in the Jewel Ornament, like lengthy descriptions of each of the types of hell, the occasional hells, etc. But Trungpa Rinpoche, when he came to the West, he explained them also as psychological states. And so even if you don't think, oh, I could have been born in a hell realm, thank God I'm not like being chopped to pieces, you know, by iron saws like every minute of the day over and over. Like, maybe you don't think that that's really a place that you could go. But we all know what it's like to be in hell. Like, in a moment of hell, or a week of hell, or years of hell, depression, grief, bad things happening, pain, anger. Anger is the classic, you know. It's like the 8 hot hells are hot anger, and the 8 cold hells are cold anger. And everybody knows what hot anger is like, and everybody knows what cold anger is like being frozen out or freezing somebody out. So if it helps to think of them in this way, like, just momentary experiences we all have had. We've all experienced being a hungry ghost, being so needy and not being able to have our needs fulfilled, to be an animal, to be sort of not know what's going on, to feel like you're being chased or pursued, or you're in some kind of danger, or you're being used like a workhorse, or led around by your nose ring like an ox or whatever, like a yak. So we're not born into a hell realm, or we're not in one at this particular moment. We're not born in as a hungry ghost. We're not born as an animal. We're not born among barbarians, you know, say people who, like, we don't encounter those in our experience, but places where, like, there's no literacy, there's no, you know, just no chance of anything like Dharma or Dharma practice happening. To be born as a long-lived god, meaning, like, the meaning for us of that would just be to be born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Like, your life is so perfect. Like, every wish that you have is fulfilled instantaneously. So you don't need the Dharma because your life is perfect. There's a pitfall in that if you understand the Dharma. But what it would feel like if you had that would be like, well, I don't need anything I don't have. My life is perfect. So it's good that we don't have that. to hold erroneous views. That means to be stuck in views that are contrary to reality. Taking the Buddha Dharma as reality, of course. Not believing in karma, not believing that your actions make any difference at all. So you could go out and shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, for example, and it wouldn't make any difference. Or you could, you know, you could do something mean to somebody and you would never experience any consequences. Well, that becomes karmically a problem if you believe the Buddha Dharma. To be born in a dark kalpa in which no Buddha has appeared. So you could be not in a barbarian culture. You could be in the most literate, elegant culture in the world, but it doesn't, there's no Dharma. Like there is no path available to you. To be born with impaired sense faculties, meaning such severe impairment that you cannot understand the Dharma. You cannot practice the Dharma. I think we're all aware of the possibility of those kinds of situations. So those are the eight unfavorable conditions, and the eight freedoms are the eight states of not having those obstacles to Dharma practice. Then there's the 10. So on top of that, so that's not enough. Like that's good, all of that's good, but it's not enough to be a precious human existence yet. It's like, this is why it's hard. You have to have so many conditions. You have to be free of eight situations that make it absolutely impossible to practice Dharma. And on top of that, you've got to have 10 things, you know, the 10 resources. And the 10, five of them are things that we bring to the situation, and five of them are things that we have to find that have to be in our outer situation. The ones we have to have are to be born human. We're not an ant. Like that's a stopper. Born as an ant, no precious human existence. To be born in a central place, that's what it's called in Tibetan, a place where the Dharma flourishes, where you have access to the Dharma. To be born with all one's faculties intact, not to have a lifestyle that is in conflict with the Dharma, something that would prevent you from practicing the Dharma or would just engulf you in such negative karma that you could never get out of it. And to have faith in the teachings, like you've met the teachings and you believe in them, that allows you to practice them. If you had no faith in the teachings, if you didn't believe what the Buddha said, then you wouldn't be motivated to practice. So you bring that to the situation. You bring, okay, this makes sense to me, so I'm going to do it. And then the five that you have to encounter that depend on other people or other circumstances are that a Buddha appeared in the world. He taught the Dharma, not all Buddhas teach. The Dharma still exists. It's been passed down from generation to generation. We have met the Dharma. We have encountered it. We met a teacher. We met the opportunity to, like, for some of us, that first means reading books. We encounter books on the Dharma, and it sparks our interest. And you have been accepted by a spiritual teacher. Okay. So those are the 10. So that's a lot of stuff to have. And not on this earth, not everybody has that by any means. But also, I mean, I think you can be awakened and not be Buddhist. I mean, I think there are other sort of paths and opportunities available. So it doesn't have to be Buddhist. But there are people, there's cultures where it's just not possible. Places on earth where people are starving to death. Like, they can't think about anything else because there's no food, because there's a famine, because they're in the desert, you know, because they're in a war zone. Imagine if we were Syrian refugees. You know, I'm sure that, like, many of them do practice their religion, but they're busy running and avoiding being killed and grieving and so forth. So we're very fortunate to have everything that we need here. And Lama Norla, you know, he came from a culture that was destroyed, a Dharma culture that was destroyed. And he always, especially the first years he was in this country, he just talked a lot about how much we should appreciate living in a place where we're free to practice our religion, because that got destroyed in his country. People were put in prison for having a picture of the Dalai Lama. So then we don't have to go over all of these because I don't want to use up all our time, but because I want to get to Ken MacLeod and Pema Chodron. But the next list is really helpful. It's on page 56, and it's also in The Torch of Certainty in probably slightly different words. the 16 ways that we can have the whole foundation for a precious human existence and yet not be able to actualize it. So some examples are that, like, the first is to be greatly disturbed by the five poisonous emotions, you know, to be easily triggered, to be easily engulfed in emotion. And that is like the opposite of Dharma practice. That's what we're waking up from. Like, what are we waking up from? If Dharma is about waking up, we're waking up from being enslaved to our emotions, from being triggered by every little thing. To be extremely stupid. I think here it means like gullible and thus easily led astray by unsuitable friends. Stupid is a word that you see in like the old texts a lot, because I think the Tibetans didn't really quite grasp the derogatory meaning of it. You don't hear people use that quite so much now. To a mistaken path, like to hit the wrong, like some cult. You know, you happen to like get ensnared by a cult that really didn't have any validity. To be lazy, like to have everything you need, but just not be have the energy to actually do it. And so on and so forth. So those are worth studying and thinking, like, is this my life? Am I using my precious human life? And if I'm not using it, why not? You know, what is it that's stopping me? And it could be a very valid obstacle. And that's the thing we have to work with if we have one. So just to skim through other things. So why it's hard to obtain. So aside from the fact that all of these conditions have to come together, if you just look at, I'm at the bottom of page 57, if you just look at how rare human existence is, and I think this is in the Torch of Certainty, like if you, all you have to do is pick up a rock and you see like more bugs than you can count. But like the census is taken in every human country. You can count all the people, but you cannot count all the bugs. You can't count all the bugs in like a square centimeter of the ocean. So like of all the births that are possible, a human birth is rare. And a precious human birth, I mean, of all the humans on earth, how many of them practice a valid path? Like have a path available to them, have the leisure, the time to do it, and have the inclination, like actually engage in it. It's very rare. And now the quote that Marilyn was referring to earlier on page 58. Well, first of all, he leads into it by saying most beings fritter their lives away in meaningless, selfish, trivial activities. Let that not be us, I would say. And by selfish here, I think he just means things that are to benefit oneself. I need to make more money. I need to, you know, have a better meal. I need to have this. I need to go shopping. Like things that really are only for our own sort of enhancement or comfort or pleasure or whatever. I think it's true. Most of us do fritter away good bits of our lives in things that really don't have meaning. But as we're learning and discussing today, we can bring the Dharma to everything we're doing. And I think that that helps. We can watch TV. You don't have to not ever watch TV, but you watch it with awareness. And actually Rinpoche, like the very first time I met Lama Norla in 1980, I got a little teaching from him, and I know everybody's heard me say this, but I got an interview with him at the end of the evening. Chanda Chinrezi in New York City, sort of dodging the roaches, and got to go back to his room with my friend Carolyn, who had introduced me to him, and we didn't really have a question. So Carolyn said, well, what do you do about fear? Because New York City was a lot more nitty-gritty back then. Those of you who were in New York City in the 70s and early 80s, it was a more dangerous place than it seems to be now, other than like people are not running over people on the sidewalk in vans and things like that. Now there's that to contend with, but just generally, you never knew what was going to be around the corner. And Rinpoche said, just think that everything is like TV. So there you go, bingo, TV. Like when you watch TV, you can think, my life is just the same. It has just as little reality, ultimate reality, as what's happening on the screen. But again, you can also appreciate the three kinds of suffering and so forth. There's ways to bring the Dharma to even the most trivial, selfish, and meaningless activities we can engage in. So, but anyway, here comes the quote. Nevertheless, you might think, I'll continue my ordinary activities until I'm 50 years old, but then I will dedicate myself to the Dharma. Well, some people don't make it to 50, you just never know. And for many of us, that ship has sailed long ago, and did we really start practicing the Dharma at 50? That's the other ship, not the ship that's going to carry us across, you know, to the other side, but the ship of, like, well, I guess it was the same ship. We missed it because we were going to start when we were 50, and now we're like 60, whatever, or 70, whatever. So don't put it off. Like, the whole point of the second thought. So the first of the four thoughts is exactly this. It's exactly this verse. First, I must meditate on this precious human existence with its freedoms and resources, difficult to attain, easily destroyed. From now on, I must make use of it. So that's the verse we're on. That's the correspondence to the fourth thought. Second thought, impermanence, is like, you don't have time. You can't put it off till the next day. You don't know if you'll be alive or if your circumstances will have changed. So you no longer have the leisure or the capacity. Do it now, in short. My mom had a pillow that with that emblazoned on it once. Do it now. So there's other things we could read, but we're not going to. He talks about the three kinds of suffering on page 59. All things that will contribute to our mindfulness and awareness. And carefulness as we go through our day. Always see things in terms of the three kinds of suffering and appreciate people's suffering as ways that, like, impede the possibility of their waking up in this lifetime. You know, we have to use it while we've got it. So let's see. He gets the first Four Noble Truths in on page 61. At the end, on page 62, at the end of the section on verse 1, he says, the scriptures and texts of the Dharma include many profound and detailed teachings. They cover a wide variety of subjects, such as the five traditional sciences or kinds of knowledge. Many people, however, will not be able to hear, reflect, and meditate in detail on all of those texts. In the present text, however, the 37 practices of the Bodhisattva, the very essence of all the teachings is laid bare and conveyed in the form of instructions on how a Bodhisattva should practice. So in short, it's all here. It's all in this book. This is your long rim. This is your guide to the stages of the path, how to travel the path. And this is your guide to how to conduct yourself and develop as a bodhisattva. So you can pick one book. It could be this book. It could be The Great Path of Awakening. It could be The Jewel Ornament. Pick a book. Just do that one. That's all you need. Kala Rinpoche. You know, there's so many practices. We are given so many practices in the Vajrayana. But Kala Rinpoche used to say, all you need is Chenrezig. You can become enlightened just doing Chenrezig. You just have to engage in it. About the Nundro, he said, one prostration done with full awareness is the same as 100,000 done without full awareness. Like, it's all, everything's all in one thing. You just have to actually plumb its depths. So we have the opportunity to travel the entire path and learn the whole Dharma from just this one book, starting with verse 1. So he says, using these instructions in the 37 practices of a bodhisattva, devote yourself entirely to practice. Reflect on their meaning, the meaning of these instructions, again and again, and try your best to apply them. Eventually, you may wish to go to a solitary mountain retreat to meditate deeply upon them. Well, that's going to bring us, that's like a lead into the next verse. Well done, Nyingma Chenzi Rinpoche. So again, as I think I emailed last week, I really recommend that you recite the verse that we're on every day, at least once. I would say, you know, first of all, study, contemplate, and meditate. Try to fit those in every day. Do some studying. You know, the studying could be as simple as going over the verse. The contemplating could be as simple as, what does this verse mean to me? How does it compare with my experience? And then the meditation could be just letting go of all those thoughts and just resting the mind. And I really, again, encourage everybody to meditate every day. 5 minutes is enough. Like, just do it every day. It fulfills the requirement. You're living as a bodhisattva. You might want to do more, But it depends, you know, 5 minutes fulfills the requirement, you know. There's a whole range of what we can do to live as a bodhisattva. One thing that we could do is, like, if you set aside some time to meditate in your meditation spot, you could use that time to do study, contemplation, and meditation. You know, you could, so that could be the time, like, you just sit down to do a little meditation, but you start by reciting the verse or reading the verse. Recite it 3 times. It really helps to do it more than one time. Work on memorizing it if you can. Marilyn and I like to do that when we're out for a walk. I find that, that's when I edit. It's like, no, wait a minute, there's a better word than that. So make that, just incorporate it into your practice, into your meditation schedule, to go over the verse every day. Do it in the morning and the evening. Do it at lunchtime. If you've memorized it, you can do it anytime. I do mine like hundreds of times a week because I really want to learn. At the end of this, I want to be able to just say the whole thing. Like, I'm really, that's my aspiration. At the end of this, I'm going to be able to recite all of the 37 practices in their entirety. So anyway, do that every day. And remember this instruction. This is a very important instruction, to meditate, to study, contemplate, and meditate without distraction day and night. That is the practice of a bodhisattva. So I'm going to now, I got to get my Kindle. It's been charging. So it's all charged up now, and I'm going to find the in the cloud. Okay. I'm going to go back to verse 1. There we go. This is like a little meditation opportunity while I'm thumbing through my Kindle. All right, verse 1. So I have it on my Kindle, so I can't show you the cover. I can show you it on the Kindle. So his translation's a little different. Ah, thank you, Marilyn. Reflection on Silver River. His translation's different from mine because he did not aspire to put it into chantable verse. Right now, you have a good boat, equipped and available. That's his way of saying freedoms and resources. It's fully equipped, that's the resources. It's available, that's the freedom. And hard to find. To free yourself and others from the sea of samsara, day and night, constantly, study, reflect, and meditate. This is the practice of a bodhisattva. So here is the scenario he sets out for us. You are standing on a wooden dock. It is old and falling apart. I'm thinking this would be samsara. In front of you, the open expanse of the ocean extends to the horizon. Below your feet is a boat, well stocked and fully equipped. Everything you need to make the voyage. You know it is because you took care in preparing it. It is the only boat at the dock. The other moorings are empty, forgotten. You are not exactly sure how you came to be here. We could reflect on that. Is that true for us? Like, how did we end up Buddhists? How did we end up on this path? You are not exactly sure how you came to be here, but you do know you cannot turn your back on the ocean, yet you hesitate to step into the boat. What stops you? So there's a contemplation. I would just stop reading right there, and I would just sit with that. I wouldn't necessarily think about it, but I would just sit with that. To whatever extent I'm not making use of my precious human existence, that I'm not getting into the boat, why is that? What's stopping me in this moment? Why am I choosing another hour of TV? Why am I choosing, you know, this other frivolous thing that I really am not even going to enjoy? It's going to be one of the 3 types of suffering. Why am I not getting in the boat right at this moment? Because being in the boat is doing your practice. It's studying, contemplating, and meditating. Not necessarily formal practice, but it's being in that Dharma frame of mind, seeing with those Dharma eyes, as Valerie said. Whenever we're not doing that, why are we not doing that? Why are we lost to samsara? Why are we lost to anger? And we're not applying a remedy. Why are we indulging in, you know, whatever it is that we like are addicted to or attached to. Why are we not stopping ourselves with all the tools we've been given? Like, why are we not getting in the boat? From the town behind you, you hear a constant hum of activity. Cars, buses, people crying their wares in the market. The faint wail of an ambulance, a police car, a fire truck racing to the next emergency. We hear all of the suffering going on, everything happening, all of samsara all the time. You know that your friends, your colleagues, and your relatives are all busy providing for their families, moving ahead in their lives, making their mark in the world. You are here looking at the ocean. As a Dharma practitioner, that's what we do. The boat gently bobbing at your feet as waves lap against the dock. The world behind you, all the hustle and bustle, seems simultaneously full and empty. There are many enjoyments and rewards. You have tasted them. But you cannot escape a sense of futility and annoying insistence that wonders, is this all there is? Your friends sometimes touch the same feeling, but they turn away from it quickly, a gap in the web of life that is never explored. You cannot turn away. And obviously that's true of all of us, because why would we be here? Why wouldn't we be binge watching like the next thing on Netflix? Why are we here in this class? Because we can't turn away from the ocean. We see that boat at our feet. You cannot turn away. You wonder how they can. And you wonder what, if anything, you can do for them so that they do not turn away. You wonder because you are pretty sure that you are missing something, and that is why you prepared the boat. And you think they may be missing something too, but you do not know what. What will it take for you to step into the boat? And that's the end of the commentary on the verse. What will it take for you to step into the boat? What will it take for you to actualize this Dharma that you have right in front of you, both through study, contemplation, and meditation? So I think that's just a lovely commentary. And I'm going to also read, anybody got any comments on this before I read the very short commentary by Pema Chodron? Kathy, you're not like signaling, right?
Lama?
Namdak, yes.
Tell me again the name of the book, please.
It's called Reflections on Silver River.
Thank you.
Ken McLeod, he's the translator of Great Path of Awakening.
Lama, the other book, Tuku Origin, what's the name?
Oh, Blazing Wisdom. Uh-huh. That's just a fun book. It's also a Dharma book. I mean, Tuku Origin is such an inspiring teacher. His books, the books he wrote, like his teachings, As It Is, it's a two-volume Dharma book. As It Is by Tulku Urgen is one of the most amazing books I've ever read in my life. He was a Nyingma Dzogchen teacher. But Blazing Wisdom is just his fun life.
Wait, what's the amazing book? Say that one again. Is it not this one?
It's called As It Is.
Okay.
Which is how that's what he calls nature of mind, as it is.
Okay.
He's a nature of mind teacher. He skips everything else. He just does nature of mind.
Okay.
All right. So anybody have any other comments, questions, anything? All right. I'm going to read Pema Chodron, and then we are going to do our meditation. So I just took notes on it. It's not like her exact words. I mean, a lot of it is, but it's going to be not grammatical and all. So she said the main meaning of this verse is, our life is so short and such an opportunity to awaken, but we can spend it falling deeper and deeper asleep. We can weaken habits that cause ourselves and others to suffer, or we can strengthen them. We have practices to accomplish the former, practices to weaken the habits that cause us to suffer or cause us to be asleep. The image of our basic nature is limitless space and wide open sky. Weather and clouds are habits that keep us confused, suffering, and stuck. So, you know, our basic awareness, our basic nature is the open sky, and what obscures it is the clouds and the weather, the rain, the hail, all of those things that we experience all the time. metaphorically speaking. We have to get to know the clouds really well. Like, we have to get to know our situation really well. That's the point of the Four Noble Truths. That is an explanation of our situation in samsara, why we need to free ourselves. So we have to get to know the clouds really well to connect with the sky that is always there. The point of the verse is that we have such a short time between birth and death. This becomes more vivid the older you get. She says that from the vantage point of 80 years old, and she's spending her 81st year in retreat. We have such a short time between birth and death. How are we going to spend it? Very similar to what Ken MacLeod is asking, and his text is the one that she's using as her main text to teach from. Are we going to waste it, or are we going to use it to wake up? Can we use everything that happens as the path to awakening, not seeing anything as an obstacle, but using it all as material? Very Trungpa quote there. What are we going to do with this day today? What are we going to do with the upcoming weekend? What are we going to do with the month that follows? Are we going to wake up, or are we going to go more to sleep? Are we going to become more kind and wise, or are we going to cut ourselves off more from each other? And that's her commentary. Same thing, like, what's stopping us from getting in the boat? Are we going to do it? When I wake up tomorrow morning, am I going to get in the boat, or am I going to fritter the day? We have that choice every single day. We have that choice every single moment. We're making that choice right now. We're choosing to use an hour and a half of our time on Thursday afternoons to be in the boat. And that's significant. I think that's huge. And so anything you can do on top of that during the week is going to be very helpful and reinforce your bodhisattva aspirations. So let me see if I've got anything else on here. And if anybody has any questions or comments, anything you want to say, now's a good time. Okay, I did that.
Are you going to send your next verse?
I am. I've done four verses.
Oh, so good.
But I'm only sending them one at a time because I want to give myself lots of time on my walks to go, oh, wait a minute, this is better work. So that I don't torture everybody else. Well, Lama Denis said that. He said, just a second, John. Lama Denis, I had got to talk to him about translation a few years ago because he translated, you know, he was in Kala Rinpoche's first retreat in France, and he was recognized as a Rinpoche. He's now Lama Denis Rinpoche, and he has a retreat center in France, and I forgot what I was going to say. I get all lost in these loops of like saying something about Lama Denis. What was I saying? Anybody remember? I got to talk to him about translation.
Something about translation.
Oh, yeah. And he said it. He always drives his students crazy because he's always changing them. Because they chant only in French. They don't even do Tibetan. He says Chinrezi in French. He has Ma Kala in French. He has everything in French. All the ritual practices they do in French. And he's always tweaking his translations. And he said that they hate it. It drives them crazy. Anyway, that's totally frivolous, you know, commentary. All right, I can preview you on verse 2. What verse 2 sounds like. I will be emailing it, emailing a recording, and emailing the diacritical marks if those are helpful. So it's, while those I love can stir up a tsunami, and those I hate can burn me up like fire. When I don't care, I lose my moral compass, and dark delusion permeates my mind. To give up all my habits and opinions, the homeland where I've dwelt from life to life, this is the way a bodhisattva trains. I'll explain more about that next week. It has a line in it that's not in the original Tibetan. The reason for that is I'll explain it next week, but I think it's valid to put that in there. It could be done without it. And we can talk about that. I actually was thinking it would be nice to have kind of a voluntary focus group on the translation in case anybody has any comments or suggestions for the translation. I can email about that. John, you had something you were going to say. Did you still want to say it?
Yeah, well, I had a question about, I got confused about some of the choices of words in the commentary. Because on page 63, he says, normally it's the traditional way is comparing attachment and aversion. Now on 63, he says attachment and hatred.
Yeah.
And then on page 64 says entanglement in desire and aversion towards desirable experience or sensual experience rather. And yeah. I'm going off my notes because I don't have the thing in front of me. Now, is this just him expounding on it or did I miss something?
It's a twofold thing, I would say. One is that in English, you know, I majored in French in college and I took classes in translation, and English has something like 10 times the number of words that French does. Tibetan's way even like less words than French. They have basic language, and so they don't have a lot of synonyms, but in English we do. So we have a choice of ways to translate any word, and different people choose different, or different context will mean anger instead of hatred or whatever. So sometimes it's the same word being translated differently. But then Tibetan also has different shades of meaning, and so he may have said different words. I mean, here we're talking about, we don't know what Dingo Chensei Rinpoche actually said. These are the words of the translator. So I don't know, but I do know that like for the three poisons, like it can be desire, it can be attachment, or it can be attraction. Dupa, the Tibetan. And the shedong, the one that is often, it used to be mostly translated as hatred, but it was realized that that's really strong. It's really a range of things from aversion to full-on hatred. It's that spectrum. So there's the spectrum of attraction all the way up to greed, basically, although we do put greed in a different category. And then there's the spectrum of aversion all the way up to hatred.
Yeah, I just found it odd that it was the same translation, I mean, the same commentary, and with these little variations within it. So I was like, okay, well, what are we talking about? Did I lose something? It's just a translation, and okay.
I think we should rejoice in it. You know, it's okay. Like there's just a lot of ways to say the same thing or different shades of ways to convey it. But that's something we can talk about next week.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to see where I'm at. Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, with that verse, I think that would be a good place to discuss that further. Anybody else have anything to say? Okay. So we have 4 minutes. So we're not going to do a lot of meditation today. But this was an intense verse with a lot of information. Most of the commentaries on the verses are much shorter than this. Very, very important verse. So we're going to then end with just a few minutes of meditation. We're not going to do the two wings today, but we will try to do it next week. Well, again, we're moving towards the verse that really introduces it. So if it doesn't happen until then, that's not a huge loss. Where's my prayer sheet? I'm just looking for my prayer sheet before we do the meditation. Amazing. Where is my prayer sheet? I do not know. Sorry, everybody. It's another meditation moment. There we go. It's right at the bottom. All right. So let's just do the verse one more time. A parting, you know, parting verse. What we are going to do in class, generally, we're going to focus on the verse that we're working on that week. We will always chant all the verses together, however many we've covered. So we're going to just chant together. If anybody's not muted, I'm going to mute you. Okay. Just going to chant the verse together again, just one time this time. This precious human life so hard to find, its freedoms and resources like a boat, to navigate samsara's endless sea and make myself and other beings free.
for that without distraction day and night, to study, contemplate, and meditate. This is the way a bodhisattva trains. And let's just let ourselves meditate on that, simply letting go of all thoughts and concepts, all verses, just resting in open awareness, following your breath if you'd like to have a focus. Letting go of all thoughts as they arise. Okay, I have 2:30, so we'll just do the prayers now. Sorry that the meditation was short, but we'll work on that. All right, dedication of merit, remembering all sentient beings on whose behalf we have engaged in this study, contemplation, and meditation. This merit, may it win omniscience, defeat my faults, the enemy, then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate all virtue fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. And letting our minds come to rest just for a second again. One breath. All right, I appreciate everybody coming and everybody engaging in this. I can stay for 5 minutes if anybody wants to chat about anything, and anybody who needs to leave can leave now, or I can end the meeting for everybody. If everybody wants to just end it, like, okay, I'm here for 5 minutes. I'm gonna unmute everybody. And everybody's unmuted.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye Linda.
Yeah. Bye Chet. And by the way, I respond to all names, children, Linda, Lama, anything you wanna call me is all good here.
Okay, boss.
Nandak, yeah.
I have a question. Your PayPal account name, if I want to send an offering.
Oh gosh, it's.
Do you know that off the top of your head?
I don't remember. I think it might be Lama Children. But you want me to send it in a link?
Yes, please.
I'll just send it in the email. Okay.
All right. I think that's very important that we support our Dharma teachers, and it's not something we're really used to doing. And we have been given this great gift of having a fantastic teacher who is versed in the Dharma, and we should make sure that we support her. Mm-hmm. So there.
That's very well put. Optional, like everything else, completely optional. This is a free class. But thank you, Marilyn, for that endorsement.
Your class is priceless.
Yeah, well, that's what I say. It's like there's no price on it. We're saying the same thing. But thank you, Marilyn. I do appreciate it. All right. Anybody got anything else?
I just want to say hi to Kathy.
Hi, Valerie. I'm coming to New Jersey, but I don't think I'll see you.
Oh, go give me a ring.
I will.
Lama Chodron, I think you're using your old translation for "and make myself and other beings free."
I wondered about
that. Did I say that? Oh my God, I forgot to change that. No, that's the right word. And set myself and other beings.
Oh, good.
I'm using an old printout. You're right. Thank you, Lama.
Yeah, I was going to email that.
Okay.
Because that's how
fine to blurt it out to everybody, either way. That's actually going to be a verse. John, how was the audio video sync thing this time?
it looked fine today. And I was going to also add that the way to share, unless they're recording on their own, is better with audio, like Mark said, because it's a smaller file. It can even be emailed, most likely.
Yeah.
So we have to decide between us if I'm just going to email you the link, or if you're going to have people going through me and I send that out.
You can. Why don't you just email it to me and then I'll have it too? I think it's good for everybody to get it. But that's up to you. I mean, you now have the whole email list, I think. I think I sent the last email, like, direct and not BCC. But I'll do that from now on because nobody objected.
Okay.
So you'll have all the addresses. So we can, do you have a preference, John? Because you can also send it to everybody. That's fine with me.
Whatever is easiest for whatever you want to do. If you want to less off of on your plate, then have them email me. You know, we'll work it out where they can email me, but put it in the subject about the 37 practices. Otherwise, I'm going to see a name I don't know and not get it.
I think it makes the most sense just to send it to everybody. Is that doesn't cost money or?
If it's in an email, no, it don't.
Okay. Well, we'll try that. I think just send it to everybody and people can use it if they want.
Okay. I'll try that.
Okay, great. Good. I'm wondering, we didn't have as many people. Maybe we didn't have anybody with a really bad internet connection that would have thrown it off. I don't know what was better today, but I'm glad it was. All right. Anybody got any other parting words before we...
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Likewise, it makes my day and my week that people are interested. So I'm always happy to do this and happy to see everybody. Well, I will see you next week and I'll send out an email later today probably with all the next stuff.
And we'll see you on Sunday.
And see you on Sunday. That's right. Okay.
Have a great walk.
Have a great walk?
Yeah. Don't you guys walk together?
No, she's in D.C. and I'm in Richmond.
Oh, I was going to
She just say. Shared with me that she was working on her memorization while she was walking. And I'm like, oh, that's what I do.
Okay, now I get it. Oh, so I'm walking with you, too.
Okay, we can all walk and do our verse. Okay. All right, bye, everybody. See you
next week. Bye, everybody.